subject matter I will be sharing with you this evening is entitled Weaving of Stories into a Lay. Weaving of Stories into a Lay. It is my first time here at Holden Village. Some of you I've had the chance to share two other sessions prior to this one. I'd like to tell you that I am from the islands of Hawaii. I am at least 3/4 Hawaiian. My mother is what they call pure Hawaiian. And I found this out only 5 years ago. In Hawaii, to be Hawaiian over the past 150 years was considered to be of second class. So oddly enough, my own people became minorities in their own land. And lots of the things that belonged to my heritage and my culture was passed on to me through my grandmother. And she's now gone on. But a lot of things that I learned through having life experiences. And part of the life experiences was the fact that my heritage, my culture, and the stories of my people were not passed on in any writing form. We did not have a dictionary until 1969. The written word, as far as Hawaiian was concerned, was not even established until 1971. The University of Hawaii at Manoa on the island of Oahu did not recognize the study of Hawaii or Hawaiians as important until 1971. The first renaissance of my people began that year with the hula festivity that has now become well known across the USA and into places like England, the Caribbeans, and even on into Europe. We have dance companies that come from the islands of Hawaii that are now established in places like the whole West Coast, clear on over to the East Coast. You will run into these brown-skinned people who look sort of like me, who might talk differently from me, but who in fact are from the islands of Hawaii. And they have kept their heritage alive purely by sharing it in word of mouth, through music, and in the form of chant. The first significant thing you must know about our heritage is that it was used, the language was used to speak about the life of the people and where they come from. The storytelling was made specifically to highlight the special events of people's lives. This morning I was in Narnia with the children, and there was a young boy there, and his name was Seth Perry. And I turned to Seth and I said, "Seth, tell me, what's your birthday?" And he said, "I was born on November 18, 1980, at 10 o'clock. And I turned to the rest of the kids and I said, "Seth Perry was born to the parents of Tom and Britt on November 18, 1980. That is history. That is a very important part as to who he is. In Hawaii, according to my grandma's stories to me, there were specific things that were always brought out and always shared. And a lot of the specifics always pointed towards who they thought was in control of things and who they felt was there to answer for the needs of all who were involved. Because of this, things like the leis of old Hawaii were not found to be floral leis like this. There were leis that were made of things like seashells from the ocean, nuts from specific trees, and the important feathers that came off of birds' wings were also very, very important. Those feather leis were important only because the Hawaiians, seeing the birds fly into the heavens, said, "Whoa, there's no other creature that can do that. It has a gift and it has a power that supersedes all others. If we had the gift of flight, we would fly among the gods." Because of that, they considered the bird's feather, which enabled it to leave the ground and to soar into the air, as something to be very, very powerful. For that reason, the bird catchers would learn what seeds the birds ate off of, what trees. And they found one tree from which a sap was taken. They placed it on the branch of the tree to which the bird would fly to eat the berries. When the bird would land on the branch, it would be stuck by the glue. The bird catcher had to climb the top of the tree, reach out to the branch, take the bird off, pluck off only two feathers, just two feathers, which would always grow back under the wing. And the two feathers were yellow in color. After plucking the two feathers off, they would release the bird into flight and allow it to grow its feathers again. They would never, never think of killing the animal, never think of taking its life. Not an animal that was able to leave the ground and soar through the air. Its power was too great. They would take those feathers and they would weave it into capes. The capes were made from simply taking the coconut husk, husking a coconut off, taking the fibers, weaving the fibers together, and creating a piece of rope. They would then lay it out on the ground and actually create a net, like a fish net, but using just these coconut fibers. Upon finishing that network, they would then take a feather and tie the feather onto each of the ribs of the coconut fibers. Think about it. It took them several years to do one cape. The cape was especially set aside for someone of royalty. And in the Hawaiian lineage, your lineage came from your mother's side, not your father's. Let me say that again. Your lineage came from your mother's side, not your father's. The belief was that the bloodline flowed from the woman to the child. Therefore, the child's family line was stronger from its mother's side, not its father's side. If I was to greet you in the tradition that comes from my people, I would first have to tell you whose family I come from. And when we'd meet this way, I would have to tell you from my generation back until the gods. And if you were one who we call Maka'ainana, one of the land, you would have to know the same knowledge. It is nothing that you can pick up a paper and say, oh, well, this is my mother and this is my father. It would have to be something that you would memorize orally. Somebody said to me this morning, I think it was Kat, I want to say, Sharon. Sharon said to me, my God, Joe, how do you remember all the kids' names and all the people who sat at the table? And I realized that that's something I was trained to do. My grandma made sure that I would memorize names of people that I had never, ever seen, nor would I ever see, just so that I would have the knowledge by name of people who were of my land before me, all of my past ancestors. And the reason for this is that when I was growing up, Hawaiian was still spoken. It was still a language used at home, but only in my grandmother's home. When my mother was going to school at the Episcopal Church, she was forbidden to speak the language. If she was found speaking the language, she was removed from the school. These are things that we learned as the years went along, and I would question my grandmother about it because I could never understand why it was that when we were at home, she'd rattle off in Hawaiian, but in public, she would never utter a word. And the only time she would say anything to me was to put me in line. But it was done very quietly. And I watched some of you do it very well when you said, come here. And you whisper a thing or two, and your children turn, and they sort of like, okay, Mom, or okay, Dad. These are some of the things that we grew up with. There's a word that I'm sure most of the children at home in Hawaii are always familiar with, It's called Kuli Kuli. And all Kuli Kuli really means is, you're making so much noise. And for a long time, my brothers and sisters always thought that it meant be quiet. It doesn't. It actually says, you're making so much noise. And you, as the person that's being spoken to, then take it upon yourself to decide, do I want to be quiet or do I want to continue making the noises? Until the person says, kuli kuli kawaha, which means your mouth is making so much noise. And that suddenly draws full attention to who's making all the sound. And you, at that certain age, simply says, okay, I better stop making the noise. This is how I was raised. And at certain parts, it got to be kind of schizoid for me because the person was drawing my attention to my actions. And I didn't mind that. It's when she demanded that I make a decision about what was the proper action and what was not acceptable. And she made me consciously aware of what I was doing from a very young age. As time went along, she would also tell me the stories of the land that she grew up in. My great-grandmother was the first caretaker of the first Episcopal Church that sat in the land called Waikiki. And they also had the church right on their property. The first builders of the Mormon temple were my great-grandfather on my mother's dad's side. This family was really mixed up because one half of my mother's family were Episcopalians and the other half of my mother's family were Mormons. And we were a minority. We were the Catholics. In spite of all this vigorous religious activities going on, one of the strongest things we were taught was that we were family first. All these other religious sects had to come second. But what we learned from them, the good things about them, we were called to use in our daily life with one another. And so with that in mind, I tell you about the stories that belong to my people. This is an ipu, and it was always used in the hula halau. A hula halau was a place where you dedicated your total life to the art of hula. Hula was used for specific purposes. It was used to tell the events, the important events that occurred in the life of a people that lived on an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It's neat for us to find out that hula was also something that the Hawaiians felt, the gods and goddesses of old Hawaii, did not involve themselves with. And it was a discovery and a chant that was put together where a young girl comes to meet the sister of Pele, the fire goddess, and this young girl's name is Popoi. And she turns to Pele's sister and she says, Hiiaka, do you know the dances of the land? And Hiiaka looks at Popoi and she says, no, Popoi, I do not know of these things. Teach me. There is a whole story told about the teaching of the first hula to the sister of the goddess, Pele. In this story, the most important thing that unfolds is the fact that one, a mortal, went to teach an immortal a thing that was common to the land, the dance. In the story, it ends with Pele calling all of her sisters together and saying, which of you will dance for me? And it is the favorite sister, Hiiaka, who says, I will. Pele looks at her and says, how is it that you know the dances of the mortals? And Hiiaka says, because one is my friend. She has taught me to dance on the shores of Kea'au. Today in Hawaii, that shoreline of Kea'au still sits there. The lava flow is approximately 28 miles from Kea'au. It's still going out to the ocean. People are very, very concerned. For a time, I was here in the mainland, the ending of May to the middle of June, and people in Minnesota were asking me things like, well, what happened to the church, and what happened to the store, and what happened to the congregational church? I couldn't answer because I had left home, and I was not in the mood for watching the boob tube while I was in the Midwest. And when I got home, I found out the store, the congregational church, and the whole park has been completely covered over in about 12 feet of lava. And some people were just amazed that the Hawaiians from the area would stop and say, it's okay. It is all right. It doesn't belong to us. What exists there does not belong to us. This is another thing that's very important for you to know. Hawaiians have a real different attitude about the land. And that is, we really cannot own it. Because when we die, it stays. Music. Hawaiians have had this natural flair with music. And when a friend of mine said, why don't you copyright that? I said, I don't really own it. It's not mine. And she got kind of upset with me. And I looked at her and I said, I realized that what I heard came from somewhere, but it doesn't belong to me. It was given to me simply to share with everybody else. But please know something, it does not belong to me. With that in mind, I'm going to share this one chant with you. It was written for the shores of Hilo in its old form. The other night, I was in the dining room here, and a gentleman walked by with a t-shirt, and on it, it said, No ke anō ahi ahi. No ke anō ahi ahi simply translates as the time of the evening. The time of the evening for us in old Hawaii was a time when all the work stopped, you sat down together, and you ate the final meal of the evening together. When you were through eating, it was time to talk story. And it was then that you would tell about the events of life that happened to you on that day. This is what the chant sounded like. No ke anō ahi ahi, te aloha wa kaha. No ke anō ahi ahi, te aloha la, I tahali alia ana mai. Translated, it's the time of the evening when I'm with my loved ones, and this is the time of the evening that we tell the story of what happened during the day. That chant was shared at a conference that we happen to be in charge of every year in November. And for the past 15 years, we've done this conference in this little Catholic church. There are between 300 to 500 people that belong to this community that I work for. And over the past years, we've brought in at least 14 to 16 artists from clear across the USA. It is not sponsored by the diocese, it is just sponsored by this little church. Several years ago, we did that piece of music that you heard, the chant that I just did. And there were friends of ours. When I say ours, I mean Linda Hagen, Linda and Marty Hagen, and myself. And a gentleman by the name of David Haas, who hails from Minnesota, who happens to write music for the Catholic Church, but we forgive him. And the piece of music that he put together He simply put together, after hearing the story of the song, the chant I just did, and it goes like this. We come to share our story. We come to break the bread. We come to know our rising from the dead.
Try that with me.
We come to share our story. We come to break the bread. We come to break the bread. We come to know our rising. We come to know our rising from the dead. He took that simple story that was danced for him, that was chanted for him, took the essence of its meaning, and put together a piece of music called The Song of the Body of Christ. It is one of the songs that has happened to catch on like wildfire through the Catholic Church. And the reason for it is that the melody is simple, the words deep, and it's been used for different parts of a gathering. Because we are always called to come together, how we come together is very important. I am so aware that people walk through the doorways here and you have your children with you. And it's wonderful that you are on a retreat with your babies. It is also a space where I know that little ones would rather be someplace out there playing and having a good time than sitting in a room with adults who are saying, "What is this all about, man?" I only know that because I like working with them in a space that belongs to them, a preschool or any school. And it's a space where they can be themselves. And you as adults are called to be in a space where you're called to be the best you can be. And here's a space that enables it tremendously. When I first walked into this room, I looked up and I said, "Wow, nice ambiance." Moving, alive, and breathing. What is creation? Several of your children will be involved with tomorrow night's Vespers. Yeah, you will be, Travis. And you too, Kier. And you too, Evan. And it's been so neat working with your little ones. What I've been astonished with is I've been singing Hawaiian to them. And out of nowhere, they just sing along. The words come up and I'm going, "All right, you can handle it, you know?" And these things we're going to be doing tomorrow night for the children's Vespers, they just decided, "Well, we want to do it too." And I said, "Fine, come, I'll teach you." With that in mind, I'd like to ask you right now, if you have any questions, whether it's dance, culture, history, I can put it together the best way I know how. I will answer your question and I will also add in some other things that I think are important to it. So don't hesitate at any time to say, "Joe, you know, I got this thought in my mind." And I'll be glad to work with it the best way I know how, okay? I'm going to share something with you right now. So at any time that you have a question, don't hesitate to ask. For those who were here before, you will know this. For those of you who just arrived, you won't know this. It's a piece of music that Marty wrote. It's called The Tales of Wonder. I wanted to do this because tomorrow night or Friday night, we're going to be sharing it with everybody who's in the room. So if you know it, feel free to jump in when we do it for the gathering. It's called All You Works of God. What here?
Do you think we could all rest
it? What I taught you today?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You know it, but the adults don't know it yet. Okay, so we can help by teaching. Okay. Let's get the kids up here. No, we want to save you for tomorrow night. We don't want to blow it. The children are doing Vespers tomorrow night, and part of the things that we're going to be doing are things that we shared with them here. So, this piece of music was written for a piece called Tales of Wonder, and it's called All You Works of God. The words are, "All You Works of God, every mountain, star, and tree." Try that with me. "All you works of God, every mountain, star, and tree." Bless the one who shapes your beauty, who has caused you all to be. One great song of love and grace, ever ancient, ever new. Raise your voices, all you works of God. Okay? I wish Marty was here. He left, yeah? Anyway, I'll try and explain this to you. I know when Marty has been writing music, I found out from Linda that he's inspired by being in different places. And Linda said there's two particular places, here at Holden Village, and when he comes to this church that I live at, I work at in Hilo, are perhaps two of the places that he's been most inspired to write some of the music. When we first heard some of the songs that he put together, we were like, wow, it had a real touch of island in it. And several people who had heard the music came off of the album, Tales of Wonder, were like, oh, Hawaii just influences taste all the way through. And we were like, well, we didn't ask him to do that. But when he did do it, one of the things that came out for us was that the music, the words, and everything that was involved was so up. So up. When I say this, it's because part of the things I've become aware of is when music grabs you here and pushes you up there, there's a part of your spine that just goes, yeah? People of the Eastern thought have an attitude about that. It is the energy levels that travels through your body. And as it goes up to the top of the spine cord, it's like reaching the optimum. And it's like a real lift from inside. So when Marty wrote some of this music, we were impressed only because it touched from inside and it just pulled you up. So I'm going to share it with you again. I don't have the music, but I can just do the words. It goes, all you works of God, every mountain, star, and tree, bless the one who shapes your beauty, who has caused you all to be. One great song of love and grace, ever ancient, ever new. Raise your voices, all you works of God. I love it here. Boy, what a hoot. How can you top that? With this in mind, again, dance for us comes from the word. The word. In Hawaiian, if there is no word, there is no dance. And for us, the importance of that word has to stir into action the life that we come from. And the dance is done in the sense to tell the story of the living word. It has to tell the story of the living word. It's the same thing sitting back there and hearing Verlan talk about the potato chips. It is holy scripture where his sister comes from that says, you don't have potato chips, I got some. That's living word for her. For everybody else, it's a word that they want to kill her with. But nonetheless, it's the experience that he came from. And the nicest part about that is he brought you and me into that experience. And each of you were probably thinking about your own brothers and sisters who went, I got ice cream and you don't have any, na 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 na. Think about it. Because there's something that happened in your own where these images come back. The nicest part is when he does that to you, the next time you see your little ones do that to each other, please don't go, will you please knock it off? Because you're then taking away their stories from each other. You're trying to be the one that comes in and makes it right. And sometimes it's just not possible to make it right. It is just not possible. The same thing with what we learn with the lays. This morning, while I was teaching the lay making class, it was interesting when somebody said to me, well, do the colors signify something? And I said, well, you think about it. And she said, well, I think it does. And I said, that's good. And we began to talk about it at the table, what we felt the colors of the flowers would say. And before they were able to make their lei, I said, the Hawaiians believe that any time you make a lei, a kapa, which is a quilt, or anything of that fashion, you must make the first one for yourself. Again, you must always make the first one for yourself. The reason for this is making a lei or anything that's of an adornment is not done in 5 minutes. The ladies had the class this morning. It took me roughly an hour and a half to 2 hours, only because I've been making them for the past, I'll be 40, 25 years. So I could do it that quickly. When I first learned, it took me 3 hours to do not even 6 inches. And the reason is because it was the lei being made for myself. And I simply turned to the people who came to the session this morning and I said, think about yourself, and how do you see yourself? And how do you see yourself in the flowers? And what flowers can you pick out to speak about who you are? So that when it's completed and you put it on yourself, if anybody should look at it, they would want to know, what do the flowers say? Because they speak loud and clear. Mine might say, colors are all pretty well segregated. And that's just the beginning of it. Part of it too is because of where I come from historically. I am of a people who are minorities in their own land, and being Hawaiian was considered to be not even second class, was not even on the totem pole. They westernized the island so well that today it's becoming an increasing problem for we to continue living in our own islands. Affordable housing for families there started at $167,000. I know. And somebody asked me, well, you guys must make good money then. And I said, oh no, we don't. Extended families help a lot in that fashion. Basically because, beg your pardon?
You should start worrying about the lava.
We should start worrying about the lava. We should. But thank goodness it's just going out into the ocean. And it's adding more land on. And Travis, if one day I see you with a house over there, I don't know where you came from. This is something that's it's been ongoing in the islands, and it's something that we island people have not been able to have a control over. We wish that were the situation. With Hawaii and the labor market that was originally there, they brought in laborers from different parts of the world. The Portuguese came in, the Chinese came in, Japanese came in, Filipinos are now in. With all the new ethnic groups that have come in, it's become more and more difficult for just the regular people who are from the land to stay there. As far as they're being involved directly with the government, that has been something that's taken lots of years. We have someone now who's the governor of Hawaii, who's the first island-born and Hawaiian. The machinery that put him in is Japanese. It's being honest, because we do know who had the power there. And all of you across the USA are beginning to discover that. The Japanese do some wonderful things. The Japanese I'm speaking about are those who are Nissan. They're second generation in the islands. And when they came in, they saw it as profitable to find the political machine and how to work with it. Hawaiians were not involved that way. We were people who lived on the land, cared for the land, But all of it belonged to a chief. And the homage was paid to the chief by everything that grew there. That since has changed. After Kamehameha united all the islands, it was much easier for another culture, another attitude to come in to change it all. We do have a chant that was put together before Captain Cook came into the islands. It was kept hidden by all the hula companies. And these are people who are in the dance company. And it simply translates as saying, you who are the child of this land, hold on, hold on, hold on tight to your heritage, for new waves of things are coming in. And as they're coming in, one day you will discover that you no longer have the land to hold on to, and you will not have the ha that you come from. For those of you who have never heard the word ha, ha means the breath of life. And ha for Hawaiians is translated by our greeting with one another. As you walked in the doorway of this building, especially for those of you who just arrived, when they called your name and you stood up, and upon introducing everyone, the clap, that was expressing to you the welcome. For the Hawaiians, when they came together, it's like the Eskimos, they put their noses next to each other, and they would go and breathe in. This thing called oxygen was something they couldn't see, but they knew that if you didn't have it, you would keel over. They knew that there was such strength in that air that when two people took it in the same place, they were both taking in the spirit together. They were bonded. The bonding simply says, I can no longer go out to offend you, to hurt you, or in any way disgrace you. Our spirits are mixed. Because of that understanding, when the first wave of visitors came to the islands and they greeted the Hawaiians would go up and the hands came up this way. And you do the natural handshake. That means ha a'ole. A'ole means not having the breath of life, okay? So if you hear the phrase, hey, haole, haole simply means not sharing the breath of life. And please know something. There are many Hawaiians in Hawaii who I might refer to as being haole, only because they are not concerned for the life force of others. They put themselves first. And that's something else that's very un-Hawaiian. The aggressiveness. Hawaiians were never an aggressive people. They're an agricultural people. The forces of wars by tribes came in from the Tahitians. It was not something that belonged to our people. The first wave that came into the islands was told in a story by a woman who lived for 116 years. The booklet was put out by her grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and it's called The Tales of the Night Rainbow. In this book, she speaks about the first high priest who came from Tahiti. He came to all the islands to see what was there and to study it. Once he saw all the main strategic points, he went back to Tahiti, came back with a force of armies, Tahitian warriors. In the story from the book, she tells her grandchildren and great-grandchildren how a fleet of canoes were entering the bay at Molokai, where the lepers were placed years later. And in the story, she tells them of how this complete flank of ships and canoes that are coming into the port, all the warriors are dressed in red. The color red for Hawaiians depicts something that's fierce. They stood on the shoreline ready to attack the people. When she called the people together, all they did was stood on the shoreline and began to chant. What they chanted was their family genealogy. When you do that with people who come from the South Pacific, and you begin to chant to them and telling them where your roots come from, if they still decide to come and war on you, they are warring upon their own ancestors. For Hawaiians, when you do that, you become kauwe. Kauwe is likened to the living dead. That is something you just do not do. You do not go out to take the life force of people that come from your own line or your own lineage. Because of this one episode of this woman taking her people out there, and they're standing there and chanting all of their family lines, this entire fleet of warriors stopped. No one dared come onto the shore because they knew that they were sent there to kill the people there. They stopped. The warriors turned and never touched the shores of Molokai. In the same book, it speaks about falling out of love, of care with each other. And in the book tells about when we are born as a bowl of pure light. When you are born as a bowl of pure light and you begin to grow up, the tutu says to the grandchild, when you learn anger, a stone drops into your bowl. When you learn greed, another stone drops into the bowl. When you learn evil things that provoke actions from you, more stones drop into the bowl. Until one day, the stone and the light cannot share the same space, and the light is put out by the stones in the bowl. And you become stone. The grandchild says to the grandma, what do I have to do to get rid of the stones? And she says, pick up your bowl of light and turn it upside down. Let the stones fall away. That image about the stones that we have in our own lives is a very strong one. Pohaku for Hawaiians means the rock. And pohaku is a very strong substance. Could be used to mash things at the same time to take a life. One who was like pohaku, we would also call them po'opakiki, hard head. Okay, hard head. And that phrase po'opakiki simply says that sometimes we become so set in some things that we become hard as rock. And it not only sits here in how we think, but it soon becomes a part of our heart, and pretty soon the love cannot reach out. These are parts of the images that belong to the land that I come from. And we have many people who have struggled hard at watching themselves from becoming hard heads. Unfortunately, they are human too. Any questions? Yeah, Travis. Pretty close, Travis. You're asking about volcanoes. On the islands of Hawaii, one thing we have that you did not have at Mount St. Helens, we have what are called lava tubes. Okay? Lava tubes are a network of tunnels, and it happens to be created when the hot molten rock comes up. And as it pushes up from the bottom of the ground, there's an air pocket in front of it. And as it goes through the rocks, it pushes air right through. When the lava flows through, all that's left is a tunnel. When Mount St. Helens had the molten magma coming up, it didn't have those tubes. So instead, the pressure built up. And if you have pressure that's just building up and nowhere to release it underneath, it blew it right up. Our lava, our volcanoes are fortunate that way because we have lava tubes. So it takes the pressure off. But we still also see lava shooting up in the air. And it's pretty. It looks like a water fountain with bright red water shooting up. And this is another thing too. My name is Joseph Kanoilehua Camacho. And we became very westernized. My name, Joseph Kanoilehua Camacho, came from my father's brother, the oldest of the children. He had no children. And there were 12 of his brothers and sisters, and nobody named any of their children after him. So the fear was that the name would be lost. So instead, my mother decided to name me that. I was her 12th child. And when she named me that, I grew up saying, I didn't like the name. How could they give me this weird name? And one day I said to her, why did you name me this? And she said, I named you this because Uncle Joe did not have any children. And I was aware that he might not have any children, and his name would end right there. So I decided while he was alive to bring you into the world, I would give you his name. So he would still understand that he would go on. And Hawaiians of the old days never had first, middle, and last names. That is something that came with Europeans and Western. Okay. Hawaiian, through the South Pacific, if you came from the family of, you were a child of that family. You did not carry that name. Like my last name is Camacho, and if it was Siberinski, you would not necessarily have to carry Siberinski because everybody knew you were a child of that family to begin with. That's how small the islands were. They already knew whose child you were. You were given a name that was either a dream name, a night name, or a family name. A dream name is a name which came to the person who was either bearing the child or the parents or grandparents of the woman who was expecting the child. And when it came, it was a name that came in the person's dream. And oddly enough, there are names that come that way to the Hawaiians. And once the name was given, it could be a name that could never be given to anyone else. My grandmother's name had 50 some odd letters. It's Kuipolani Ikapolipu Mehana o Namaka o Kaha'i. It translates, my sweetheart with the soft eyes, yet the hard heart of the woman of the sea. When my grandmother was given this name, there is no one else in my generation or my mother's generation who was given the name, because the name was considered to be Kapu. Kapu does not mean keep out. Kapu means sacred. In Hawaii today, you might drive around and you'll see all these signs that says Kapu, K-A-P-U. And some people refer to it as keep out, no trespassing. In actuality, Kapu means sacred. So when you ask more about these things, that's what happens. It's real intricate. Yeah.
What's your mother's nickname?
My mother's nickname? God, this is a hoot. I'll tell you right now, my mother is pure Hawaiian. She came from a family of entertainers. Her maiden name was Kaleikini. You might hear about this Hawaiian Golf Open that takes place every year. The guy who's the host of it is a direct cousin of my mother's. This Kaleikini name was a name that was renowned through Hawaii over years before anyone came into the land. I'll tell you this last story, and it goes like this. My grandmother married into the Kaleikini family. The Kaleikini line comes from the island of Maui, an area called Hana. My grandmother had one sister-in-law, my grandfather's only sister. My aunt Mary, when she was of age, married. The person she married was from the mainland USA. He was in the military. Her mother could not stop the marriage, was brokenhearted that this only daughter through whom the family line was to be carried was not marrying one of the land. Her decision, Mary's decision at that point, was to leave, to go and to be with her husband and to live with his family in a new land. Before she was to leave, my great-grandmother asked her to please come home to Hana one last time. She agreed. She asked my grandmother to go with her. The story I'm going to share with you came from my grandma. And my grandma died 9 years ago. But I was told the story from the time I was 5. My grandmother with my Aunt Mary had to take a boat from Oahu to the island of Molokai, and finally to Maui. When they reached the harbors in Maui, they had to take one of these old sandpans and ended up in the coastline of Hana. Today, if you go to Hana, it is some 50 some odd turns to get down to the area. So you're traveling along the cliff lines. When my grandma arrived there with her sister-in-law, my great-grandmother told my grandma to please prepare her sister-in-law. And this is what she must wear. She must be dressed in a white gown. With her, she must bring a red lei made of either a seed or a flower, but it must be red. My grandmother says, with that, my great-grandmother leaves the house and comes back with an elderly Hawaiian man. He walks into the home, he greets my grandma and my grandmother's sister-in-law, and he says to my Aunt Mary, tomorrow morning before the sun rises, I will come for you. When I call to you, do not ask me any questions. You must simply follow me. And when I ask you to do specific things, do not question me. Just do as I say. My grandmother was kind of worried about this because she knew this being the last child of that family, what were they going to do with Mary, who would carry on this lineage? The next morning, my grandma sat up and waited. And this old man arrived. In Hawaiian, he called, "Oh, now naita hala me talehua, eh halelehua no ia nakanoi, eh ia no ine e iali ane ho iwa I kai kimai, ahi kimai no owe, ahi kimai no me te aloha ano ai te valina e." My Aunt Mary stood up, walked out the doorway. My grandmother waited. This is before sunrise. Did not see her sister-in-law till late that evening. When her sister-in-law came in, her sister-in-law sat down and said, "Esther, I need to tell you this story. You are married into this line. I need to tell you what I've come to learn." The old man, upon taking Mary from the house, in the area of Hana, began chanting from the shoreline into the mountains. When he entered the mountains, my Aunt Mary looked above her head and suddenly discovered she could no longer see the sky. She was taken into the dome of the mountain. The old man, through the entire trip, only chanted. And as he called out before himself, the winds would come in and clear the passageways. She would walk into a thatch of greenery and discover a house with water on two sides flowing in front of it. All the fruit trees around it, anyone could live on. The old man stopped as the water crossed and he said, "Malia, Mary, mai hoioi e ku'ulei, give me your lei." Mary took the lei off, walked up to the old man, presented him the lei. He then did one final chant, put the lei into the water, and the lei floated across. The man then turned to her and he said, "Mai hoioi, let us enter." It was then that my Aunt Mary learned that the line she came from, the first Kalaikini, was the messenger of the kings. He was given the gift to chant and to call forth the winds to take him to any island he chose to go to. This man, Kalaikini, was a very handsome and stately looking man. On every island, he ended up having a woman of his choice. Unfortunately, on one island, He took a woman that the high chief had thoughts of. And when he did that, he was placed into that mountain, never more to call the winds. He was imprisoned in the mountain for simply overstepping his boundary line. My Aunt Mary recalled all of this to my grandma. Upon seeing this house, the man unfolded the history of the Kalaikini family to her. Because the life force that was coming from her came from the man who was imprisoned in that mountain. She was then taken out of the mountain to the other end and came out at a place that we call Iao. And if you go to Maui today, that is one of the first places they will take you to, Iao. And if you fly over the top of Maui, where the area of Hana sits and the mountain range is there, to the area where Iao sits, you are near the dome of Haleakala, which is the house of the sun. For my great-grandmother, she needed to tell her daughter the heritage that she was giving up. She needed to simply say to her, when you leave this land, you will not be able to come back. You need to know what it is that you're leaving. And my Aunt Mary, when she left the land, my grandma, until her death in 1981, had never heard from her sister-in-law again. And we do not know what happened to that Kalaikini line. We just knew who she married, but we never learned of any of her children. And for us in Hawaii, that is really, really very different. Very different. Because we're such an isolated people. We thrive and we grow with family. But for this one lineage, as I say, which is passed on through the woman's side, when my Aunt Mary decided to go into another, it was ended. Thank you.